Yeah, good, bad, and ugly on a Monday. Hope you had plenty of good and a good Father's Day. Whether you were celebrating your father or just being a father to your children or whatever it was, hope you had a good weekend. And prayers to all those who have lost their fathers, including you, Mr. Godbolt.
Thank you.
And all those out there on a fatherless Father's Day. We had a good one for sure at the house. And trying to sift through the weekend, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Plenty of it out there. Maybe the ugliest thing of the weekend was Bryson DeChambeau on the back nine yesterday at the U.S. Open. I don't know.
When is it, E, that you get to a point where your strategy, and I don't know if it's being hard-headed, and you've won a major championship by doing what you do, just hitting it long. When is it when you're like still in the thick of things? Because everybody's falling apart. I mean, it's not just, you got to look at the scoreboard and say, you know what? I'm still right there. Maybe if I hit this three wood, which I hit longer than anybody hits their driver, with more control, maybe I really have a chance. And the other thing is, why would Bryson wear spikes one day and then go plastic the next day and slip around and still not have those spikes like in his bag? Those bags are jumbo. It's like this huge
foot slipped a couple times yesterday.
Yeah, well, why wouldn't you have your spikes?
Massive tee shots.
Don't you change into your spikes and say, you know, I can't afford to slip here.
Well, I mean, it's one of those, I don't know, historically, have we ever seen anything like it? I mean, Bryson DeChambeau was the defending champion. You know, going into Sunday, he was, you know, putting as well as anybody. You knew he was going to give himself a chance. And then, gosh, you know, we went up, you know, middle of the day before the leaders really teed off. We went up to the pool, and we're just kind of getting in the water, relaxing, having some sun. And I'm checking my phone, and I'm like, holy cow, Bryson's in the lead. I got to go home. I'm like, this has become a huge story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bryson DeChambeau is going to come after this thing back-to-back. So I get home, plop myself in front of the TV, and, you know, we now know it was John Rahm that hit the accelerator and went and took this thing from everybody. But he shot 44. On the back nine, and he made a triple seven. He made a quadruple eight, and as you say, that's, you know, you can gamble on yourself, and he has.
Right.
You know, he's muscled up. He's gotten big. He's going to get the club head speed. He's going to hit it as far as he can. Just overhit the trouble, but that was completely a calamity for him. He went from the lead after 10 holes at 5 under to shooting a 77, and just maybe the worst 9-hole stretch we've ever seen from a major champion in a major.
Yeah, and for regular golfers that watch that on Sunday, you could see, I mean, guys like Schauffele, they make these putts, they make these, you know, inside the leather putts all the time. But when they go off, when they miss it or misread one, E, and it's like 9 feet by, or they've got a, what you'd call a 4-footer that looks straight down the middle, and they just miss it so badly. There was a lot of guys just missing.
Well, look, a lot of guys struggled, right? I mean, because that's a tough golf course, and you knew at that course the front nine is the easier side. The back nine is really tough. Toughest two holes on the course are 11 and 12, and those things play into the wind typically, and, you know, right off the Pacific Ocean, it's tough. And so, as we talked about the leaderboard, you know, had all these great players on it, and, you know, they made bogeys down the stretch, and that's why John Rahm making pars through that really tough stretch of the beginning of the back nine into the middle of it, and holding firm, and then getting to 17 and 18 and rolling in those two incredible putts to make birdie. I mean, that's a guy that was a rock and then went and won it. The other guys just made bogeys, which bogeys were going to be made on that. But I don't know. I mean, golf fans out there can tell me, has there ever been a worse back nine Sunday performance by a major champion? I mean, this guy was not only the defending champion, he's a major champion, and shot 44. I mean, that's just unheard of in golf. And he can talk about how his foot slipped and...
Yeah.
I mean, he completely lost his mind. I've never seen a professional do that. I've seen guys on the course on Wednesdays in the skins game have that happen to him. I've never seen a pro do that.
I just don't, when you're just trying to prove a point and you continue to try to prove a point, and, you know, sometimes he has good luck when he hits it long, so long that it's in the rough. But a lot of that, people have trampled it down and stuff like that. But dude, if you missed it in the wrong spot in that rough, it was, I couldn't see the ball half the day.
Yeah, well, that's tough, and that's they make it very tough. They challenge every shot. You got to be straight off the tee to give yourself a chance, and then if you are in the rough, then you're just trying to get it up and down and give yourself a decent two-putt once you get up there. If you're in the rough off the tee at a U.S. Open, you're not going to make a birdie.
By the way, it is fun to watch.
It is fun.
To watch those guys struggle and see what they're going to do when they're so used to golf courses where they're 22 under. I actually thought that they would be 12. I said that last week. I think 12 will win it, and I should know better than that. Nobody gets 12 at U.S. Opens except for Tiger Woods. That's a That's about it.
Think about it. For Torrey Pines, the wind was pretty tame this weekend.
I mean, hey, you're right. Absolutely.
That, so that course plays even harder if the wind's up a little bit, which it was not. And they still just, you know, 6-under was the winner for four rounds of golf. And it took
And that number was coming down. I thought that number was coming down. I thought the guy in the clubhouse at first, was it French or who the hell was in there?
Harris French.
No, I thought at 3E, he may be going back into a playoff the way it was going.
And it looked like it when everyone else is collapsing around John Rahm. But John Rahm was just so good. I mean, that guy was really dialed in. That guy was, you know, hitting fairways, getting himself up and down, and obviously he was putting very well. Because, again, the birdies will be legendary, the 17 and 18, but
yes,
the par saves he made through the toughest holes in the course were just big because everyone else was bogeying those holes, and he was holding firm at 4-under and then was able to go birdie to get to 6.
And I have seen the snake, so you guys can quit it now.
Snake's big. And Louis, gosh, Louis, you know, finished at 5-under. He birdied 18 after going in the penalty area on 17. That's one of those, and we know Louis Oosthuizen's one of the straightest hitters on the tour. He's a great player. How do you end up left on that hole? I mean, he can go as far right as he wants, and he's
okay. Any place he wants to.
And he ends up left, the only place he can't go. That's just, you know, golf is a mental game, man.
He's done that twice this year. You know, he played in a partnership deal down in New Orleans with a guy, and he knocked it in the drink when they had an opportunity to win. And it was like number 17 or 18, too, where he just carved one, and it went off to – and this one went right, not left.
Oh, man.
But
bad swings happen.
Well,
it was the most inopportune.
He's a farmer now, so.
And a rancher, and that's why what Rahm did. Rahm didn't really make a bad swing down the stretch, and he made some incredible putts. All right, so we got that out there. The Longhorns' 21 strikeout performance was pretty ugly as far as good, bad, and ugly goes. It was a good baseball game, and I think if you looked at the numbers coming in, Texas has been a high strikeout team at times, and then two ridiculously high strikeout pitchers that they faced. As we said, the starter strikes out about 12 per nine innings, and the reliever strikes out almost 17 batters per nine innings. So they ran into some buzzsaws, but they got to get that figured out pretty quick. They play Tennessee coming up on Tuesday in an elimination game. They don't want to go 2 and barbecue again, because that happened the last time they got up there and didn't win a game in Omaha. But Buck, the Longhorn football team also had a recruiting weekend, not as, you know, billboard worthy as the weekend previous when Arch Manning was here. By the way, Arch Manning was at Alabama this weekend visiting.
You think he liked it?
I didn't, you know, when he was in Austin, there were all kinds of pictures going out, there's all kinds of pizzazz. No, Alabama's just maybe
okay.
Just looking at championships.
What does it mean? Tell me what it means.
Yeah.
Come in. Sit down with me. I'm Nick Saban.
Hey,
I have championships.
Do you know me? Do you know who I am?
Do you know who I am?
Whatever happens, we just get another player.
Yeah.
Whether you want to come here or not, there, Arch, that's up to you.
So yeah, that went on. Recruiting continues for Texas.
Did they get a player over the weekend?
No, not that I've seen. I've not seen it. Correct me if I'm wrong, there was a lot going on. So if there's something that did come down,
I don't know if it's disappointing, but I really thought that they would have more than, you know, in the first weekend, I thought there would be, and as we said before, maybe it's not a big deal, but I thought there would be a couple more kids that would have committed on week one.
Well, they got the kicker and the long slapper. The long snapper.
Say that again for all football fans to hear. They got the punter, not just a kicker.
Yeah, he's a specialist.
Okay, they got a specialist. They got two specialists.
Those are important, man.
Well, hell yeah. Jeff Howe had it as breaking news.
Well, he was just
Walter Cronkite-ness.
Yeah, we love Walter Cronkite.
Yeah.
What happens here changes the world, my friend. But yeah, so we'll keep an eye on the commitments and on the list. But I was interested. I was reading the insider report there at Inside Texas, where they do a great job of taking you inside the scene. And the name that I keep reading from these insiders that, you know, they talk to their folks and you get a buzz on who's having good summer workouts. There's a name to keep your ears on. Freshman Xavier Worthy is a name to watch and hear for, because, you know, we've talked about the running back position is loaded. One of these quarterbacks is going to move forward and you know, take control of the offense.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive line, I think, it needs to be better, but I think there's talent there that Kyle Flood can work with, and they should be a better unit up front with some experience and some new guys taking over. The biggest question on offense has been about wide receiver. Who's going to be the go-to wide receivers, you know, for a new quarterback in this passing game?
Right.
And we know the name Jordan Whittington. We've heard the name Troy O'Meary, the freshman a year ago got hurt. You know Jake Smith. You know Joshua Moore. These are all names to watch, but so Xavier Worthy is a name that the buzz keeps coming through from the work he's putting in this summer. Remember, Xavier was a kid who would – Steve Sarkisian and company had recruited him when they were at Alabama, and he ended up committing to Michigan. and was going to be an early enrollee with Michigan. But when Steve Sarkisian got the Texas job, Xavier, he's from Fresno, California,
okay,
and he decided to change his commitment to Texas. Got out of his national letter of intent, and he's now at Texas working out this summer. And the one thing we know about Xavier is he is a speed guy. He's a track kid from high school. But the reports from the summer are that he's, you know, one of the harder workers. He's come in with a really, you know, ahead of the curve work ethic and understanding of this offense and running routes. And so you've asked about this. Who is a guy that we can look at and say, you know what, who's going to bring the speed to this offense? Who's going to be, because that's when you saw Alabama playing and you saw Jerry Jeudy and these guys, Henry Ruggs. I mean, that was just blazing speed. This might be a guy to watch for. If he is as mature as the reports say he is, you know he's fast, because all you got to do is watch his tape and watch his track times as a high school track star in California. That could be a name to watch for, because you know Steve Sarkisian, as he's going to try to run the football, and he knows, I think he knows, if healthy, what he's got in Jordan Whittington as a guy with the ball in his hands, and a guy like Troy O'Meary and a Jake Smith. But what you don't have is that blazer. Could a guy, like, even as a freshman, a guy like Xavier Worthy be a guy to watch for as a speed component to this offense?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say that Texas needs more speed. I mean, this state is filled with guys that can run, and this team has for years had a very fast team. Now, although that was under Mac, from that point on, they haven't been very fast. But they need speed.
They need speed.
They really
explosive
do. You
plays.
Can, and I think you can see that. You can.
Well, and I think
I was blaming it on the turf. Now they have new turf, so we'll see what that's all about. They just didn't look fast, you know.
Yeah, but they looked.
They don't catch and run. They don't catch and they'll catch some bombs down the middle. Even though they don't outrun anybody when they catch them, you know what I'm saying?
Well, because I think at the like I you know what do you think Joshua Moore is, a 40 guy, probably 4'6", 4'7", type player, maybe.
Yeah, he's long. He's a little bit longer. And he plays long.
I think Jordan Whittington, top. I don't know what his speed's going to be, but he was an all-everything player coming out of high school. But look, here's what you know about Xavier Worthy, and the reason I'll put his name out there. You know, he was the number four player in the state of California. He was a 10.5 500-meter dash player.
Okay.
And the fact that you can combine that and you're hearing good things from the coach is that this is a kid that's shown up and is going to work and doesn't act like a freshman. That's what you need. You need a guy that's going to walk in here and want to play. And what Steve Sarkisian has shown, even at Alabama, is if you're good enough, your age doesn't matter, right?
No.
We're going to get you on the field because we need that component of it. And you know what Steve Sarkisian wants is his offense. He wants to run the ball.
Right.
He always has a 1,000-yard running back. But he wants guys that can put the top off a defense and scare a defensive coordinator to loosen things up underneath. Maybe this becomes a guy.
Yeah.
That,
when I see Jameson take a ball on a kickoff. When he makes that one cut,
he's exploding.
I'm going, that's it.
Yep.
There's nobody running him down or dragging him down from behind. They need more players like that. That guy's legitimate, really, really fast guy. That if he gets a step, he's gone. Now, I hope he can make it work on defense that way, where he can then cover on a ball and come back, spin around, come back and still make the play. They need more type players like that, that look physical but are fast. I mean, speed-wise.
Yeah.
Not just look fast, or they said, oh, he did this in high school. I need to see some guys fast and run away from people. That's what they need. I believe the running back can do that.
Be interesting to see. You know, one of the visitors this weekend, probably the biggest name visitor, Malik Murphy was here, the quarterback from California, who's the 5-star kid for this coming class. Jaden Blue was here, the running back out of Klein, who
me that guy is fast.
Yeah, maybe the top running back in the state.
Right.
And there's also a kid, Evan Stewart, who everybody's recruiting. He's the number one receiver in the nation in summer services. He's from Frisco, Texas, and he was in town this weekend. So those are the type of players, to what you're saying, is you want to hear some of these guys commit to Texas coming up and show that the recruiting is creating some momentum. And I think Steve Sarkisian would like to hear that too.
Yeah, I don't want to get into saying one week, wait a minute, first of all, last week you were saying, well, you don't want guys committing. You want them to finish out their deal. It's not that I don't mind them saying, I want to come to Texas, and they can decommit or go to places, but I'd like to see more say, I'm committed to coming to Texas. Whether they decommit later on down the line, they're just, to me, Ian, the first week, I was thinking, yeah, I'd probably get three guys saying they're coming.
That's exactly right.
You know?
Exactly right. And we'll see. We'll see. Now, we do know last week, Reuben Owens, the number two running back in the nation for the class of 2023, decommitted. But remember that story, he's only a sophomore, or going to be a junior, and his dad says Texas is still the leader, but they want to make sure they're making the right decision. No reason to rush, so we'll keep an eye on Reuben Owens. But that would be a speed guy, too. That is a really fast running back from El Campo. All right, somebody texted and said, you know, do you guys know if you live in San Diego, you can play Torrey Pines for $63?
get out of Dodge.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't want to play it the way it was playing this week.
No.
That wouldn't be any fun.
That'd be no fun. But if you live in San Diego, it's much cheaper. If you're from outside of the, I don't know how they, I mean, zip codes and addresses on your ID. If you're from outside, it's much more. So it's like $200.
Yeah, somebody sent us some golf courses like Pebble Beach, what it costs during the weekdays and stuff last week, which I thought were pretty cool. And yeah, I'd be willing to pay $200 and change to go play at a place like that, you know?
I'd pay $63.
I'd damn sure pay $63.
Is there anybody you know that lives in San Diego? We can get, go out there and he can get
Plus,
us some
I do
times.
Like San Diego.
Ooh, that's where you found Ricky Williams.
Yeah.
And gambled a lot at the horse track. All right, so that's some Texas football. We know Texas baseball is now backs against the wall after the loss last night, 2-1. A lot of disappointment this morning, but really a good baseball game. If you consider it start to finish, yes, the 20th. I mean, there was moments where it felt like this was the Kerry Wood game with the Cubs against the Astros, where the Longhorns just had no chance. I mean, they were getting overpowered, overwhelmed, and that's a fair statement. That's what Mississippi State, those two guys do to teams, and have their stats would bear that out. That when he's on. And he's hitting that spot and dotting that fastball. Bednar's really good. And Texas ran into it. And we talked about the umpire with the wide strike zone. That didn't help either. But that helped lead it to a nail-biter of a game. 5 hits for Mississippi State, 4 for Texas. 32 combined strikeouts for both teams, which is a super high number. It's a new record at the College World Series. But in the end, Texas had their inning in the 9th. Mississippi State had their inning in the 4th. They put 2. Texas only got 1. And that at the end, no matter what the strikeouts say, that was really your ball game. Now, could Texas have done more to be more patient, more aggressive, create opportunities with it? You know, that's all things they'll analyze now up in Omaha with David Pierce. But end of the day, that was just a pitcher's duel. That was
absolutely
high-end pitcher's duel. And you, if you looked at the stats, you kind of felt like that could be the case going into it. And as you said, Buck, from your coach's eye, Texas did look like as the strikeouts mounted, instead of calming to the moment, Texas is, they kind of sped up for them.
Yeah, that's, you know, everybody says things should slow down. We talk about that in football all the time. And the what you see should be nice and slow, and you got it, and everybody else is speeding around. They look like a group that was, hey, let's get out of the box a little bit. Let's make this guy run around. They were more like, no, I can't wait to get back in the box. I'll get him this time. It was more like that. They looked anxious to me. You know?
And I give Bednar credit because he was
playing. Well, he made him anxious.
He was playing country hardball. He says, here it is, hit it. Here it is.
That's true.
And, you know, Texas couldn't. And that's what makes him so tough, because he's that high. I mean, this is something we've seen if you're a baseball fan of major leagues. The very popular Justin Verlander of the Astros does this, right? Where when he's healthy, he dots the top of the zone with a hard fastball, that four seam high spin rate fastball that's hard to get on top of it. I mean, it's going to swing above your bat, but then he throws the hard breaking ball at the same eye level, and then it darts down,
yep,
which leads to swing and miss under it and then over it. And he was executing that at an extremely high level last night. And that's a tip your cap to a good pitcher night, I felt like, because that guy's got an ERA of like 3.13 for the season. So you know there's been nights where it's not there for him.
Right.
And he's not locating it like he likes to. Last night he was on point and had a friendly umpire. I think both pitchers would tell you they had a pretty friendly, or all four pitchers that pitched last night would say the zone was friendlier to them than to the batters.
You know, getting back real quick before we go, but on Texas and speed-wise, when I look at Texas team last year and I look at the other teams in the Big 12, speed-wise, I don't know if this, you would say, no, it's not a good thing. I'd put Texas speed on par with what I saw. And Iowa State is not a fast team. They're very deliberate in what they do, except for the running backs fast. They got a couple decent wide receivers. Defensively, they play that crazy defense. So I don't consider them a fast team. I consider them a strategic kind of team defensively and offensively. Oklahoma is a fast team. I put Texas on par, which I probably should never do, with West Virginia.
Speed?
Speed-wise, yeah. They remind me of a West Virginia. That's not good enough, is it?
No.
Okay.
No, and I think that will, you know, we got to recruit speed. I mean, speed kills.
I believe so, too.
I mean, speed and the fact that it maybe wasn't a priority for the previous coaching staff would tell you. I mean, Tom Herman missed on some of the top receivers in the state of Texas because he wanted guys that were big. He wanted He wanted the big little Jordan Humphrey receiver over the speed receiver. Whereas, you know, if you look at what Alabama was doing, none of those guys are big. They're just really fast.
They can fly. I mean, I got to believe Sark is looking in the state of Texas and going, dude, I may have to take a shot at a couple guys that may not be, you know, fives, They may be threes, but they absolutely can fly. I mean, you got to do that.
Let me tell you, Steve Sarkisian is going to start with the five stars that can fly, and then he's going to work his way down. But he's going to have speed.
Yes.
That's been a Gary Patterson staple. It was an Art Briles staple at Baylor.
That's true. Even Gary has good speed.
Well, they look for 4-3 guys and then find a position for them and develop them.
Right.
Because you can't – well, I mean, it's a cliche, but it's true. You can't coach the speed.
You're right.
I can coach the other things. I can't coach you to run 4-3,
though. And Texas should never be slow.
No. Or slower. I mean, you
slower.
Shouldn't be comparing them to West Virginia. But I think this kid, the Xavier Worthy guy I was mentioning, he's mm-hmm. he's a littler guy. He'll remind you in his build of a Jerry Jeudy or a, you know, Henry Ruggs. But, boy, is he fast. I mean, he's really, really fast. And so let's work on – and he likes to work hard, which you like, and that could be a guy that could be a factor early.
It doesn't
matter.
Kind of money doesn't have great speed, but he better catch a lot of passes. I know that.
Oh, boy. We'll be back. I love Kai Money.
I do, too.
You want to be in his agent down in South
Absolutely.
Padre
oh,
Island,
my
Texas.
Goodness.
We come back. We'll continue the good, the bad, and the ugly. How was your weekend? What say you? Things that stuck out for you over the weekend that were good, that were bad, or were ugly? Hit us on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. It's being a live, local, and digital streaming on your Horn app and always at hornfm.com.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Oh, man, this guy on the Specs text line on a good, bad, and ugly Monday says, refreshing to see the Nets collapse and fold after Harden quit on the Rockets to get traded. Kind of a karma thing. I've gotten a lot of that from this morning from the Rocket fans that are not fans of James Harden. But you know what, Buck, on a good, bad, and ugly Monday, I do feel bad for Kevin Durant, the lifetime Longhorn. You know, he was having, you know, the last part of that series, just legendary performances. And, you know, by an inch, if his big toe's not on the line, he hits a game-winning three in Game 7 that would have gone down as an all-time clutch shot in NBA history. A turnaround three over P.J. Tucker that would have won Game 7. I mean, think about that. And got nothing but net. I mean, it was a beautiful shot. It's 7 feet up over. Just an iconic look. There's a snapshot, a photo of it that I saw that's just like, man, that's an all-time picture. And he made it, but his foot was on the line. So instead of winning it with a three, it tied the game and forced overtime. And it really felt like Kevin Durant ran out of gas in that overtime.
Oh, he did. He just ran out.
Out of his legs, and James Harden was playing on one leg. And I understand that there's some guys on the Nets that are hard to root for, and they're kind of a super team. But for Kevin Durant and what we were watching, I wanted to keep watching it, which I guess is what I felt bad about. Because I do feel like because at some point Kyrie Irving's going to come back from that ankle, right? If that is a three, not a two, and they win the series, well, now you got Kyrie Irving continuing to rehab, James Harden, and I think they would have been a heavy favorite over the Hawks or the Sixers, and now it's going to be the Hawks, and you know I think they would have been a heavy favorite over whoever they'd meet from the West, if Durant's healthy and if Kyrie Irving can get back from that ankle, and Kevin Durant could have put a ring and a championship on the board this year. Not going to happen. It's going to be the Bucks and the Hawks. Who to pick that? Bucks and Hawks in the Eastern Conference Finals and Suns Clippers in the West.
You know, only the for me is the fact that Kevin Durant is that guy. He's just that good.
Ugh.
And those 48s back-to-back nights, as I said, I think that guy on any given night can give you those kind of numbers. He just can, but he understands that he needs to have other guys around him to do it. And, you know, injury's a part of the game, and he didn't have it. And he gave everything he could. And not only did he play offensively, the guy played defensively, too.
He was doing everything.
He was rebounding. He was playing against Giannis. I mean, that was...
That's as good as we've ever seen Kevin Durant. We've seen Kevin Durant really good for
a long
time.
You know, he's gotten to be a better... Zay, I would say he's gotten to be a better defender, with his arms. He's a rebounder. But that guy gets on the floor. He's not... Kevin Durant is not a fade. He's not a superstar where he won't get on the floor and roll around to get a loose ball. He's that kind of basketball player. He's got a little junkyard dog in him. It's just that he can't do that by himself. He really, really can't. And Giannis is a piece of work. And more than anything, I'm just happy to see Chris Middleton play like the number two that he's supposed to be playing like. Because if you look at his numbers are great, you know, during the course of that seven-game series. That's big-time numbers.
Well, and that was the question, right? Giannis had his 40. In the closeout game, the Game 7, which legendary for him.
Right.
But Middleton stepped in and stepped up, and he scored, 23 points. He had 10 rebounds. He had 6
game before,
assists.
He had like 38.
Yeah. And so, you got to have two stars. And you know, the question was, is Middleton a good enough number two?
Right.
had not been in this series, he was. Now, Zay, there is the advantage that Harden was half of himself and Kyrie wasn't there.
Yeah, and Drew Holiday was big for this team, too.
Yeah,
he was very timely, and his defense and leadership has been huge to this team, something that Eric Bledsoe hasn't gave them these last few years. And, you know, back to Durant, but, like, he's just the ultimate hooper. Like, the fact that he just got done playing in that type of series with the Achilles injury, and he's turned around and saying, you know what? I'm going to go play for Team USA in the Olympics because I love basketball and I love playing with great players, and I won't have many opportunities to play with great players in this type of setting. So I'm going to take advantage of it and I'm going to do what I love, and that's go hoop.
You know what? He's going to play because he knows he's going to be playing against guys from Europe that play physical. They play a physical brand. He's playing because he thinks he can get better as a basketball player by playing against those type of teams. And that's,
I think that's right.
That's kind of the ultimate hooper, right? You'd think that he would. Well, I've been playing in the NBA forever, so, you know, I'm playing the best. But I think he thinks he can get better by playing against those type that type of competition.
I think that's fair. I think he is. He wants to go play for his country, and he'll be the best player on that team because he's the best player in the world.
Until KY gets there, because he's going.
Durant's better than KY, just so you know. But Kawhi's pretty good, but I don't think Kawhi's going. Kawhi can't even play for his own team right now, for crying out loud.
Come on, he's going.
Hey, by the way, how about in an overtime game? I don't think I've ever seen this before. The Brooklyn Nets scored 111 points, and it took them. But in overtime, they only scored two.
Yeah, that was bad.
And they didn't get a single point off their bench. Not a single point off of their bench in an overtime basketball game. That's troubling because Kevin Durant again had to play the whole damn game. He played 48 minutes again, and you know that's. That was a great series.
And they all looked fatigued. By the way, it wasn't just Kevin Durant. Both teams looked like they were like, they didn't want to give in, but their bodies did. Their bodies gave in.
That was a game seven overtime. Yeah. That doesn't happen very often. And again, it was the difference between a big toe on the line or not for it to be over in regulation, and the Brooklyn Nets would have been moving on. That was a great finish, part of a pretty scintillating. That's an instant classic, Zay.
No,
all-time game.
Now, let me ask you guys about Rick Carlisle. Is there a possibility Rick Carlisle can end up in the Garden in Boston? Did he not play with Bird? Did he not win?
Yeah.
I mean, why wouldn't he be the next guy with the Celtics?
Well, the word on the streets when you read about what the reason Brad Stevens wanted to move upstairs is he was tired of, look, whether this is right or wrong, Zay, you can correct me on this, but the read is that, you know, the young players don't respect guys that didn't play the game. Like, you know, this is old school stuff, but like the young players that are coming in today, they don't look at Brad Stevens and say, man, great coach, Butler, Final Fours, championship games.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they tune him out because he didn't play. He didn't play the game. So the idea is, you know, that Brad Stevens can still, he's already made a trade. He traded Kemba Walker to Oklahoma City over the weekend. That's his first big move. And by the way, Oklahoma City now has 3 number one picks, part of this draft coming up. They're going to rebuild themselves under Sam Presti. But am I wrong on this, Zay, that the players that you're going to see like a former player in that role that can generate and interact with the players of today, these young players, and get them to play to their highest?
Yeah, that's starting to be, you know, kind of the path that we're going on. I hear names like Chauncey Billups and Darwin Ham, and yeah, all these guys are former players, former guys that are in the league that, you know, these guys that are currently playing can relate to. So, that's definitely a thing.
Well, Rick Carlisle has 2 championships.
Yeah, but
playing with Larry Bird. I mean, is there something else you need besides 2 championships?
I'm with you, but is he going to respond to today's player?
He's hung around the NBA for a long, long time. I don't recall anybody talking about him not as a player's guy,
you're right.
Not as a good coach. I was just asking the question. I don't know, young or old, how that works out, but I would think his name would be up for the Celtics and the Pelicans. Yeah, why not?
With Zion and that group, for sure, and that's its own issue. Hey, we have breaking news.
Uh-oh.
We have breaking news. How about this? Another nail in the coffin of the NCAA. The Supreme Court. We told you about the testimony, the arguments in front of the Supreme Court several months ago, and we said it would take into the summertime for a ruling. Well, the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. has just ruled 9-0, 9-0, that the NCAA rules on amateurism violate antitrust laws. 9-0.
Are they getting any money back from is there a payback coming back? I don't think retribution so. Coming here? Restitution?
I don't think so.
Give us money back?
But essentially saying that this whole amateurism model that you're trying to prop up while you're making billions and billions of dollars as an industry doesn't hold water. And what is the Supreme Court ever vote 9-0 on? Like anything, 9-0.
Sounds like there should be some cash coming back. Cash back on this?
I don't know.
For the NCAA? No, that's not going to happen.
Well, it just further evaporates what the NCAA can and can't do and how this plays. I mean, I know a lot of people out there love college athletics and what it's been and what it has been and what, you know, they remember it as. But, you know, as the money grows on, you know, the profit side, it's hard to argue. And this was their argument in court that, no, it's still amateurism. There's still a beauty to the amateurism thing and the model. And 9-0 that we're whacked.
Yes, and like in the case of Herm Edwards, there are mistakes that have been made.
Plenty.
Well, I mean, let's just make sure that's not, you know.
Just further rebukes. You and I have been talking about this exact topic for 20-plus years. I know college athletics has forever, and they try to say amateurism, and, well, look at all this money over here. Well, this is a pretty stern rebuke that their argument holds no merit, and they've been, and this goes to what you and I have said for a long time, that they've had their head in the sand, and they try to bury themselves and cloak themselves in amateurism when it was a sham from as it grew,
yeah.
And they never were willing to even come off of it a little bit. Come off of it, think about ideas that could make it more beneficial. Think about ways to work, you know, this name, image, and likeness. They could have started that on their own 15 years ago.
Yeah, they had to be told to do this.
Yeah, well, the reason NIL is coming online is states across the country are implementing it,
right,
and forcing their hand, and the NCAA still saying, oh, no. Well, here we are. Now the 9-0 at the Supreme Court level amateurism does violate their idea, and the rules on amateurism violate antitrust laws. That's a major problem for the NCAA. All right, we'll have more on that coming up. Also, resetting the top stories. We're going to hand it off to the Light the Tower gang at the top of the hour with Craig Way. Of course, Craig is in Omaha. Jeff Howe is here, and they'll have more on the College World Series and the Longhorns' place in it. We certainly will have more as well. It's B&E with you, live, local, and digital, always streaming on your Horn app and at hornfm.com.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Good stuff on a Monday. Appreciate everybody weighing in and being a part of a good, bad, and ugly Monday here on the Show of the People. We're going to hand it off to Light the Tower here at the top of the hour. And just starting our 16 hours of local sports conversation today here on the Horn. Light the Tower will be coming up with Jeff Howe at the top of the hour. Craig Way will be checking in from Omaha. Shirts and Skins this afternoon. I think Chet Hastings is back with Trey Elling from his vacation. And this afternoon, it's the triple option with RBKD, Rod Babers, Kevin Dunn, Brad Kellner. And tonight at 7, that's Glenn Davis with Soccer Matters. He'll have a lot of thoughts on the Austin FC match over the weekend, the sellout crowd. Bucky was a part of it. The pomp, the pageantry, and the city of legends, Austin, Texas, now has a Major League professional sports team. And they were fully supported on Saturday night, but it was a 0-0 draw.
Yeah, that part of it is got to change. And I think it will.
Good. And we'll hear from Glenn at 7 o'clock tonight. It's a part of a great day of Monday here on the Horn. So the breaking news just came down. U.S. Supreme Court votes 9-0 against the NCAA and claiming that their stance on amateurism violates antitrust law. And here's a portion of one of the justices, Brett Kavanaugh, wrote the following in his decision. Said, to be sure, the NCAA and its member colleges maintain important traditions that have become part of the fabric of America. Game days in Tuscaloosa and South Bend, the packed gyms and stores in Durham, the women's men's lacrosse championship on Memorial Day weekend, track and field meets in Eugene, he goes on and on. So the list goes on. But those traditions alone cannot justify the NCAA's decision to build a massive money-raising enterprise on the backs of student-athletes who are not fairly compensated. Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate on their theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate. And under ordinary principles of antitrust law, it is not evident why college sports should be any different. The NCAA is not above the law.
Now, the NCAA, we're not going back on trying to get it so that, you know, likeness and image wasn't going to happen, right? Were they waiting this out to see if that was going to flip around? Because it was
no. This case was about exactly what that ruling just said: antitrust.
Right.
They were sued under the belief that their model violates the law and antitrust laws that are written in.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, 9 justices have ruled Now, this is a big tipping point for the NCAA because they now have no leg to stand on. I mean, they were standing on one peg leg, and that's now gone. Amateurism, according to nine justices, the highest court in the land, is...
So you say there was a chance of that thing being flipped back
around.
Well,
the NCAA was arguing that, right. Yeah, look, we're making all this money over here, we're good, but leave us alone because right. of these sacred things that go on and the old college U and old state U. But the fact that it was resounding a 9-0 and no one agreed with them, I mean, what do they say now? I mean, what is, and I don't know the fallout, how this goes, but this was a monumental ruling this morning.
Well, the fallout is, are they going to try to get some money back from the NCAA? Are colleges and athletic programs going to look at them and say, you guys made an awful lot, where did that money go?
Well, I mean, I don't know if the Supreme Court will come in on that, but now, yes.
They'll try.
I don't know what the, we can go back and get mine kind of thing, or how it changes it moving forward, but it's going to be pretty dramatic.
Well, it'll never happen again. That's what it just said. That's not the way it's ever going to be ever again. But once you get that part of it, that's when everybody starts saying, okay, now that you really can't do it, what about the money that you've already made on?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't sit here in 4 minutes and predict the outcomes of that ruling, but it is pretty massive because it's basically everything the NCAA has stood on for 30 years. As people have argued, that look at all this money you're making. Why aren't the student athletes benefiting from it? And now they can, but remember, that's from outside sources. I mean, that's them benefiting on their brand and their name, image, and likeness. This thing's different than that. This completely eviscerates the idea that the NCAA, you know, can continue to move forward, because of amateurs. They're amateurs. Well, look, we said this over and over, but the Olympics lost that privilege a long time ago, and the Olympics had to understand that we've got to shift our take on amateurism and allow these great athletes to benefit and make money so we can keep our Olympic games moving forward. NCAA never went there. They never even explored that model, as far as I can tell, which is what they should have done. Now they don't even have, they can't even use that as an argument.
No.
And I don't know how that plays out, but we will see in coming days. But that's a pretty big development this morning.
Time for the Longhorn game. The times Eve for tomorrow. Is it tomorrow?
Yeah. Look, I mean, when Texas is in Omaha, and you, one of the benefits, you never want to be in the losers bracket, but the Longhorns now are. You have days off now because remember there are 2 4-team tournaments happening at the same time, essentially. So the Saturday teams who played Saturday, the four teams will play again today. Longhorns in their bracket will be off until Tuesday. So today in Omaha, you're going to get Stanford and Arizona in an elimination game. At 1 o'clock, the winner will advance and the loser goes home. So either Stanford or the Wildcats are going home. Game 2 tonight is NC State and Vanderbilt in a winner's bracket game.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the winner of that game, when you stay in the winner's bracket, you know, you give yourself, this is what Texas did in their first weekend, right, when they went 3-0 and never really had to sweat their pitching staff. So Texas will play tomorrow at the 1 o'clock game against Tennessee. And then Virginia will play Mississippi State the night game tomorrow, right? And the winner of that game stays into the winner's bracket. So Texas plays Tennessee Tuesday afternoon. Tristan Stevens will start for the Longhorns. You'll give him the ball, and you have your full bullpen ready to go. The good thing about the days off, if Texas is able to win that game, they'll stay alive, and they'll come back on Thursday and play the winner of the winner's bracket game, or the loser, I should say, of the winner's bracket game, because it's a double elimination tournament. So Texas already has one loss. If Texas beats Tennessee tomorrow, then Tennessee has 2 losses. They're out. But the loser of the winner's bracket game Tuesday night, that would be their first loss, right? So
right.
Whether it's Mississippi State or Virginia, Texas would then have to come back and play that team again in an elimination game. Winner would advance. Let's just say Mississippi State wins their first two. Now they're in the winner's bracket. If Texas could get back to playing Mississippi State again, they'd have to beat them twice.
Hello.
Yeah, because you got to beat them twice to get to the championship series. So, yes, Texas is going to have to play a lot more baseball than they had hoped to because they lost 2-1 last night. But in Omaha, you do get the days off.
Right.
In between. So it does help you save your pitching staff and you're not going back-to-back-to-back like a Big 12 tournament situation. You got time to rest your pitchers. Buck, enjoy your Monday. Poker night?
I think so.
Hey, you got the bag of money from the golf on Friday.
$40 whole.
Hey.
Doesn't seem right.
Don't spend it all in one place.
There you go.
Isaiah, an awesome job as always. Thanks to Ty Harrington. He was the guest this morning talking about that game at Omaha. If you missed any of the program, you can podcast it at hornfm.com. Rest of the shows today, I'm sure we'll have thoughts on the Supreme Court's ruling this morning. Also, the College World Series and the rest of the top stories of your Monday. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you at 6 a.m. on Tuesday morning when we next meet again at 1049, 1019 FM, AM 1260. Always streaming on your Horn app, on your smart speaker, and always at hornfm.com.